Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
The star of some of the most beloved films of Hollywood's golden age, including Bullet, The Great Escape, and The Magnificent Seven, Steve McQueen's unflappingly roguish persona earned him the nickname The King of Cool and the highest salary of any movie star of his time. Marshall Terrell's new book draws on more than 5 decades of media coverage, memorabilia, and research to serve up a slew of quotations straight from the mouth of the man himself. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the States. Marshall Terrell. Marshall, good afternoon from us. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning to you, and thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. Steve McQueen, the King of Cool, an icon. He's been, it's incredible. He is still considered this sort of iconic personality.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's a saying that cool lasts forever, and I think that applies here, but I agree with you. When I did my first book on Steve McQueen in 1993, I would have thought that he would have had his go round, his lap around the track, and that kind of would have been it. And then, you know, he would have been put in the closet, but that's not the case at all. He's more relevant today than he's ever been. And it's just astounding to see this happen.
And isn't it funny, though, as well, because you would think that a man who is no longer with us and, you know, who was huge in the 60s and the 70s, people would lose interest. But, I mean, I follow him on Instagram and through social media. So he's gaining, like, a second or a third generation audience through the new media.
Well, yes, and that's by design through the estate. And you know, they've done a really good job of placing him on ads. You know, you'll see him in Ford commercials. You'll see him, you know, on all sorts of endorsements. But, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact of his look. It's very timeless. He looks like if he were in the movies today that, you know, he could jump out of the screen and he could look like he could just be any of us today. So he doesn't appear to be a man, even though he was a man of his time, it doesn't appear as if that has locked him into any sort of time machine.
So what was your what was the reason d'etre behind doing this book? And explain a little bit in your own words about this book.
Well, as I stated, I've done several books on Steve McQueen. And I get research all the time, and I'm constantly doing research, and I'm constantly getting photos, and people just hitting me up out of the blue, telling me stories of their meetings with him. And so this sort of naturally evolved and where I saw an opportunity to do a book, because Steve McQueen never did his own book. But then as I had come across this research and I had I'd come across a lot of these quotes, and I thought, you know, this would be interesting to do a quote book, but with photos that accompany the quotes at the time, and let McQueen tell his own story, because that's never been done before. So that's what this book is. It's not a tribute book, but it's a basically almost a philosophical book by Steve McQueen on his wisdom. And if you knew anything about him, he was very much a street kid. And these are quotes from somebody that came up in the streets and then applied that knowledge to Hollywood.
Because, I mean, if you look at the early history of Steve McQueen, he was a Marine, wasn't he, as well, at one point?
Yes, he was a Marine. He served for 3 years. The interesting thing about the Marines is, you know, he said that he went in a boy and came out a man, and he fought and he rebelled against authority. He went AWOL, and he got thrown into the brig for 41 days. So, there were a lot of funny little episodes about that. So, yes, he was definitely in the Marines, and he enlisted at 17. And so by the time that he got out, he felt that he had a platform, and that platform was acting.
And, I mean, McQueen is that sort of, I mean, we call him, you know, he was the actor who was the rebel. I mean, you had perhaps more, you were coming to the end, weren't you, the late 50s and the early 60s. You were coming to the end of that sort of golden age where the cinema, the studio produced you. And you know, you had young actors coming up later in the decade. You'd have Redford, Brando was obviously doing his own thing. But then you'd have, say, by 1969, you'd have Fonda and you'd have Nicholson, for example, and Hopper.
Yes, and McQueen, it comes right on the heels of Marlon Brando and James Dean, and he kind of comes up along with Paul Newman, and so he was kind of like that second tier, that second wave of rebels. But back then they called them anti-heroes, and today you would just call them non-conformists. But he did those roles extremely well, and they resonated with audiences because you look at back at what was happening in this country at that time. When you rebelled, that was cool to rebel. It was cool to fight authority. And you're actually seeing a lot of that right now these days, except there's a little bit of more lawlessness involved.
Mm. How did he approach acting? Because obviously he'd been in the Marines. I mean, was he an actor who talked about, did you find when you were going through his letters, his correspondence, did he talk an awful lot about, quote unquote, his craft? Or did he just regard acting as something that you got on with?
Well, that's an interesting question because when he was popular, he did not talk about his craft. It was kind of like, oh, this is my day job. This is what I do to make money. He gave off the impression that acting was not a very manly thing to do. However, I did find quotes where he did talk about his craft, and he was very serious about his craft. You know, there was one quote I give where he talked about, I'm going to do everything that I can to learn about this business. I'm going to learn what the cutter does. I'm going to learn what the cinematographer does. I'm going to learn this. I'm going to learn everything that I can so that I can be the best that I can be. So his actions belied what he was telling the media at that time.
And also, it's easy to sort of say, to look at McQueen perhaps and say, oh, well, you know, he was a man's man. Every man wanted to be him. Every woman wanted to be with him. But, you know, he produced some films that were, and he acted in some films which weren't exactly sort of action, they weren't all action heroes. I mean, Enemy of the People, wasn't it, towards the end of his life came out. And that was, a departure away from that whole sort of cool image.
That's correct. And he acted in other films. He liked to do a wide variety of films, but it was his action films that made him popular. Love with a Proper Stranger was a romantic lead. Thomas Crown Affair, you know, was a caper where he played a rich Boston banker. If you look at his roles, the next one was never the same. It never duplicated. He had a wide variety in his film acting repertoire, but again, it was always the action films. I make it similar to Martin Scorsese's career, and that is, you know, Scorsese's done a lot of films, but it's always his mafia movies that bring him back to the fore.
Mm. I mean, and also it's fair to say that, you know, McQueen looked great on camera. I mean, certain people for film, you know, the camera loves them. And McQueen was one of those people, whatever scene he was with, you know, as soon as you see Steve McQueen, he can even be just walking in through the side of a door and, you know, he has the presence because the camera loves him.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that can't be taught. You either have it or you don't. But he knew he had it in spades. As a matter of fact, he once told director from Bullet, you know, I'm the best reactor in the business. And he didn't mean that in a bragging way. He just knew what he was. But yeah, he had that presence where it didn't matter who was on the screen. Your eyes just immediately went to him because he was always doing something interesting as an actor.
It's not only the his film as he's talking about, you know, he had plenty of activities away from the screen. Best known, of course, for racing. He loves his motor racing. He made the famous film Le Mans, which is perhaps one of the best motor racing films, if you're a car nut, as I am, ever made. And he loved hanging out with drivers, and he liked hanging out with the guys, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. As a matter of fact, one of the quotes in the book is, I like hanging out with guys who draw blood because they're going to be there for you. He liked hanging out with drivers, guys that were into karate, guys that raced motorcycles. He was just, those were his kind of guys. He wasn't an intellectual man, but he was a very sharp person. He had trust issues, and so he always felt like these were the kinds of people that would have his back.
Also, did he address what it was, you know, he's like as a family man, as McQueen the husband and as McQueen the father?
McQueen the father was different than McQueen the husband. The father was actually a very good father. He loved his kids, treated them with great respect, and always tried to understand who they were. As a husband, you know, he was married three times. Each marriage was different. The first marriage it was evolved from the 1950s. She was a working dancer at the time and was actually more successful than he was. But then when he became more successful, he pretty much hinted that he wanted her making babies and in the kitchen. And then, of course, there was a lot of infidelity. And then his second marriage to Ally McGraw was a lot of passion, but there was also a lot of fighting. And then he got it right his third time around when he married Barbara Minty. He was a lot older and mellower, and he finally got that one right.
So where do you start then with a book about Steve McQueen? I mean, how do you whittle down all the information to make a sort of a coherent narrative?
Well, I mean, it starts off with him talking about his background, and it's a pretty strong quote, and that was my life was screwed up before I was born, and he was referring to his parents, and his father, both of his parents were alcoholics, and the father left when he was 6 months old, and the mother was never really a caring mother, never very motherly, and so that sort of sets up the tone for, you know, his life. And, you know, his young life was very, very tragic. And he got passed around quite a bit as a kid. So that's the first quote. And you start from there. And then he starts talking about, you know, how he was brought up and what it was like on the streets and how he survived and what he did to survive. And then that goes, right into the Boys Republic, where, he was sent to reform school. And he talked about how that straightened him up a little bit, and then into the Marines, where it straightened up a lot more. And then he goes to New York in the 50s and starts acting and talks about his struggle and what it was like to act at first, and how it wasn't easy for him, but he worked hard. And then, it's not too long after New York that he finds success, and then everything sort of changes in his life, because you go from that one extreme to now getting your butt kissed for the rest of your life, and how do you have that emotional adjustment to that? So it's very interesting life.
And do you think that McQueen handled it as well as could have been expected, you know, considering where he came from and then, you know, turning into the biggest star on the planet?
I really do. I mean, I really do applaud, because the people that knew him said, you know, he was a good guy. He was a tortured soul, but he was a good guy. The thing with McQueen was, if you were a movie executive, he was going to give you a really hard time. But if you were a member of the crew, he was going to protect you. And, case in point, when he had lunch on the set, he always hung out with the crew members. He always looked, he never picked on anybody smaller than him, I guess is the best way you could say it. But he certainly had his demons, he was not a mean person.
When I speak to people who write biographies about famous figures, especially when you think you know them, because somebody like McQueen, you could pull out a picture of Steve McQueen anywhere around the globe, and I think maybe 8 times out of 10 people would know who that was. And so you bring a certain preconception of the person to whatever you're writing about. When you came to look at his own words, was there one, shall we call it a eureka moment, where you looked at that and went, yeah, that to me encapsulates what Steve McQueen was all about?
Yeah, there's one quote that resonates with me, and that's because I'm a reporter. And the quote was, there's nothing in the world that I don't want to know. And I love that quote because he reached the height of his success, and he was still hungry for knowledge, hungry to know everything that there was about life. And so that will always resonate, I think, to a reporter. There's nothing in the world I don't want to know. I just love that.
That's an absolutely brilliant quote. This book is called Steve McQueen in His Own Words. It's out now on Dawson Watson Fine Books. Marshall, if people want to find you, is there a website? Can they find you on social media? Where can they get hold of you?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and I have an Amazon page as well.
Brilliant. This book is called Steve McQueen in His Own Words. Only begs the question, after Steve McQueen, the King of Cool, who are you going to be writing about next?
Funny you should say that. There's a connection to Steve McQueen that I just wrote about, and that is the evangelist Billy Graham. And Billy Graham was on Steve McQueen. He was with him on his deathbed. And at the end of his life, you know, Steve McQueen had cancer, and he had asked for Billy Graham to see him. And so it was right before he took off to Mexico, and Billy Graham gave him his Bible. And when Steve McQueen was dead, they lifted the machine. He was clutching that Bible that Billy Graham had given to him. So, and writing about Billy Graham, you talk about a man who made the most of his life. It's quite a story.
Well, this book is called Steve McQueen in His Own Words. It's out now. It's by Marshall Terrill. Marshall, thank you so much for your time today.
I appreciate you having me on.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.